Welcome to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. I'm host and publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent, a local monthly publication of news, arts, and culture here in Mendocino County and beyond. I'm Christina Onnestad, and this show is broadcast each week live on KMEC 105.1 LPFM in Ukiah and on 96.9 FM KYBU in Covelo. Today we're going to hear from 2nd District Supervisor John McCowan, who's with us in the studios today. Hi, John. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Christina. My pleasure.
And one of the topics of conversation is going to be, of course, medical marijuana. And you were recently quoted, actually, in a letter to Obama from several medical marijuana advocacy groups asking for him to kind of curb the federal crackdown on medical marijuana.
Yeah, that was kind of a surprise to me, but that's true.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, and I want to let you know that we'll also be joined it's actually a pre-recorded interview I did earlier today with Colleen Sisk. She's chief of the Winnemem-Wintu tribe in Northern California, a few hours north of us, near Mount Shasta. She's also their spiritual leader. We talked on the phone today because they were in Vallejo earlier this afternoon to request the Forest Service shut down a part of the McLeod River so they could hold their annual puberty ceremony. That's a woman's coming-of-age ceremony that they hold every year. And they want to do it this year in peace without the disruptions of passers-by and people flashing them and drunken boaters in the area. The tribe has experienced these kinds of disruptions from the public in the past, and they're asking the Federal Forest Service to officially close public access to this small region where they hold their ceremony at for 4 days. So we're gonna hear from her, and we're also gonna hear from a spokesperson from the Federal Forest Service, John Heil. He's a Pacific Southwest Region press officer for the Forest Service. So we're gonna hear from both sides of the equation today, and we also want to let you know for some brief headlines that we have this afternoon that the Ukiah Planning Commission has voted down Walmart's proposed expansion. The company has less than 30 days, I believe it is, to appeal the decision. They have less than 10 days, according to John McCowan here, to appeal the decision. And so we'll keep you apprised on that issue, and next week we'll be going a little bit more in depth about that. So first let's go into the interview with Colleen Sisk Franco, and then we'll be joined in the studios with John. And we talked earlier today, and she said that one of the concerns is the disruption that they've been experiencing over their ceremonies.
All of the mediated attempts to hold this ceremony without interference and without hostile environment, and through all of the suggested ways that the Forest Service has initiated, it has not saved us from that. You know, the boats come up the river, they have people who have alcohol on them, they're partying on the lake. You know, it's not even their fault, but they should not be in the same location as a ceremony. But a voluntary closure, what the Forest Service thinks works, doesn't work. And so now we're asking that Randy Moore close the river. It's about 400 yards of river from the bridge where the river runs into the lake. It's not like boats can actually do any water skiing there or anything else. It, you know, jet skis, boats, Ski boats, all of those, it's a dead end. They just go up, they have to go 5 miles an hour and turn around and go back. So the ceremonial grounds are on both sides of the river, and the sacred places are on both sides of the river as well. And the dance grounds is on one side that she swims across the river to join in as a young woman on that side.
Can you describe the extent of disruption your tribe has experienced
during these ceremonies?
Yeah. Well, disruption happens when speedboats come up and make wakes. They yell at people. I mean, they yell obscenities, you know, and silly stuff, too. Like one guy yells, "We love America, don't you?" It's like, what does that mean? You know, we're trying to have a ceremony here. We're trying to do a good blessing and do some good things here, set things right. And you have, you know, these little thinkers coming up the river yelling out stupid stuff. And as well, one woman pulled down her swimming suit and flashed her boobs at everybody on the bank. It's like, it's so disgusting, you know. It's like, it's interruption, it's disrespect, it's something that most people would also be ashamed of, you know, and that's the voluntary closure. And they say voluntary closure, that means, you know, 90% of the good people, the people who respect other events going on, will turn around and go the other way. But it's that 10% who, you know, are just there to cause disruption anyway.
So have you asked the Forest Service to institute a full closure before?
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah, we've been asking and striving to get a full closure since 2005. And we have not been able to get the full closure. And each time we go through this ceremony, that's our goal, is to have a full closure and have it go on in peace and dignity for our young women to come across. But so far, the Forest Service has not found a way or is unwilling to. It's like, well, people have recreational rights. And that's part of the problem, that it's a public land. But it as well, it's a traditional cultural property, as, you know, also. And that whose rights trump who? So it's difficult for us to understand why the Forest Service can't close. You know, it's only 400 yards of the river where boats can hardly go anyway, and it's for 4 days. And it's just not too much to ask for a culture in this country to be able to carry on a ceremony so that we can survive as a culture. There's nowhere else in the world that Winnemums can learn how to be Winnemums. We have to have that ceremony to set that foundation for the tribe to follow, because it's, you know, it weaves the web of the foundation for the men to show their respect and their ability to protect and provide for the women, and the women make a space for younger women to take their places amongst them. And it's telling all of the secret places that, you know, why we're here, we're still here, we're still doing these things. We're still connected to the sacred rock that's there, to the medicine rock, to the dance ground, to all of the sacred places along the river and the pool that they swim in, you know, every day that she goes upstream. So it's really important for us to have this ceremony. It's not like, you know, we're having a family reunion or something and, you know, why don't we just move it?
What about the rights of other people? What is your response to people who say that they want a right to go down the river?
They have a right to do it. You know, there's 370 miles of lake line, and it seems like any other place on the lake would still give them their right to be on the lake and to have fun on the lake and do whatever they're going to do. But I'm thinking that it's not too much to ask that a cultural survival be given the time to continue this, as opposed to letting, you know, drunken boaters have their way, which is also assaulting the lake, you know, anyway, because they drive their boats too fast. These are really sensitive areas where the river is coming into the lake. There's a major change of temperature in the waters, and so the fish are constantly being tested. You know, you have otters, and there's a lot of wildlife where these rivers come in. And really, speedboats shouldn't even be there, regardless of if there's a ceremony or not. But we have swimmers in the water, you know, we have people in the water. She has to swim across the water, and it's a safety issue as well.
So I was speaking with the Forest Service a little earlier today, and I asked them if they had any kind of a process that tribes needed to go through or follow to access privately access federally claimed land, and they said no, that they take it on a case-by-case basis. Do you have any response to that?
A case-by-case basis for accessing public land? You know, one of the issues is it's a little disturbing that the Forest Service, the federal agency, has no process for the indigenous peoples of this land to continue their way of life, to continue their belief systems and their culture, as opposed to, you know, somebody having fun on our traditional land. And they have no process. I mean, if it is a case by case, and we've been there the longest, you would think that we would have some priority since they know that we do this all the time. And those boaters may not come back. They might be from another state. They might be from, you know, way down south somewhere that come up to boat on Lake Shasta. We are the local people. We're there all the time. And there should be some process that they develop for tribes to access our own land.
Okay. You know, I thought it was interesting because we've got so many processes. If you want to close off a street for a street fair, which we do here in this region of California once a year, we go out and we fill out paperwork and they look at it and they say, okay, you can close off this street for your party for the day.
Yeah.
And, you know,
exactly.
They've got processes for the environment, for CEQA. They got the CEQA process. You know all about these processes.
Sure.
Yeah. And they don't have anything for the First Nations people, though.
No, there isn't anything that protects our rights to continue a way of life, you know. And it's not just an American, you know, holiday fun time. This is serious. This is time that takes the young lady over a year to prepare for it. You know, and it's a serious time that the tribe comes together and sings the songs and does these dances, and you know, the everything is trying to be just right. The full moon, the flowers that are out, the levels of water, the swim across, and then you have to deal with the alcoholics. You know, people come up, just have a right to be on the lake and drive drunk on the boat. You know, and that should not be. I mean, and that's what we was asking the Forest Service too. Is like, where is your application for tribes? Because we're not just a public, we're not just a little family unit. We're a tribe. We're the indigenous peoples here. And so there should be some culturally sensitive and give points for the importance of the tribal event and sets up a way of doing this over and over again, because they know that we're not going away. We're going to stay here. We're going to keep doing this. And why do we have to keep fighting it every time? When they know what happens, you know, it feels like a form of abuse. You know, right now we're in National Women's History Month, and it's like we're asking for women's rights. These are the rights of the women went to women, and don't we have any? Don't we have any rights to continue on in a religious way of life, a cultural way of life, passing on traditions to the next generation? You know, I just hope that the people who are can understand, you know, that we're not trying to, you know, step on anybody's toes or anything, but also there should be a space for us to continue our way of life anyway. You know?
Okay. That was Colleen Sisfranco, Chief and spiritual leader of the Winnemem-Wintu tribe in Northern California, who they are asking the Federal Forest Service to close off an area along the McLeod River near the Shasta Dam to the public as they hold a four-day puberty ceremony. That's a coming-of-age woman's ceremony the tribe holds. Well, the next person we spoke with was John Heil. He's the Pacific Southwest Region Press Officer for the U.S. Forest Service. And we started when I asked him what the Forest Service's response is to the Winnemem-Wintu's request.
Well, I don't know what options might be available to us depending on what laws there are and things of that nature. But again, we understand their concerns. We're going to take it seriously. And we're going to review the information they provided us and get back to them.
They have made this request to the Forest Service before, and the Forest Service has declined. Why?
I don't know that that's true. I don't know. We are going to speak with a forest supervisor there and see what information they have received and what they may be more knowledgeable about as far as locally there. As far as being aware of what you've just mentioned, we are not aware of that, and we are looking into what options we might have.
Okay. So generally, do you guys have a policy that when a Native American tribe wants to hold some kind of a ceremony on federally claimed land, what is your general, what's the protocol there?
I don't know that there is necessarily protocol. It would depend on circumstances around the request, and it would also depend on whether they're federally recognized, non-federally recognized. There's a lot of different factors that are involved on those types of things, but I couldn't speculate on just any particular situation. Each situation's unique.
Okay, so you said it depends on the circumstances. What kind of circumstances does it depend on?
Like I said before, it could be whether the tribe is federally recognized, non-federally recognized, where the land in question you're referring to would be, a lot of different things. But I couldn't speculate on those specifics because, again, it would depend on the situation. There's a lot of different cases that might be different than another case. So to make generalities wouldn't be appropriate.
So you're saying the United States Forest Service doesn't have a protocol in dealing with and addressing requests of tribes to have ceremony on federally owned land?
Well, there is some laws in the Federal Register regarding different things as far as recognized tribes and what is authorized and things of that nature. But as far as protocol, or I guess I'm a little bit confused about the question, I guess.
So do you have any kind of process for tribes who want to access federally owned land for private purposes, for private ceremonies?
Again, they were accessing that before. That's not the question. The question is whether or not we were able to close off that area to the public so they could use it without disruption.
Has the Forest Service ever granted such a request from a tribe?
I couldn't speculate on that.
You couldn't speculate. You work for the Forest Service and you're a spokesperson for the Forest Service. Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of it since you've been working there that the Forest Service has ever done something to that effect?
Just because I'm not aware of it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I would not know.
How often do you get these kinds of requests? Is it rare?
It's the first time we've gotten one up here in the last 4 years.
Since you've...
But they might have happened at the local level more often. I don't know.
So when you consider their concerns, what are the things, and you make a decision, do you have any standard criteria you base your decision on?
No, I don't think there's any standard criteria. There'll be some regulations and rules that will have to play into this, because that's what we're governed by here. But we'll definitely look at all the different options that are available to us, and what those are right now, I don't know.
So who makes this decision?
Well, our regional forester, Randy Moore, as I mentioned before, he did talk to the tribes today, the tribal members today, and he explained that he would take a look at what they provided him, and he will speak with a forest supervisor and see what he could do. So he's going to be largely involved in the decision, along with the forest supervisor who manages that area. She knows her area very well, and she would be able to provide some insight.
So I'm wondering, I have just about one last question. And, you know, like usually we have all these public processes to go through. Like, you know, we've got, you know, when somebody wants to do, you know, some kind of an environmental, you know, we've got these environmental impact statements that need to be made. If somebody wants to change or build something near a creek, they've got to go through CEQA. CEQA has this whole process. You have to file there's like a process. And I'm wondering if the federal government has anything like that, like a streamlined process for Native tribes wanting to access ancestral land.
Well, there is rules and regulations for everything, and there is, in this particular case, there would be as well. But until we can really look at the entire picture of what they're looking to do and what we could or couldn't do, we have to really look at all the different options available and then also consider the rules and regulations that are governed in that area. So obviously those all will play into a decision. But again, we are, you know, very much taking it seriously, and we understand their concerns, and we're going to look at all the options possible to us.
That was John Heil. He's a spokesperson for the U.S. Forest Service. In a video, in an online video posted by the Winnemem-Wintu tribe, you can see the kind of disruptions that the tribe experiences when they hold their annual ceremony along the McLeod River. You can see in this video, you can see voters screaming at the tribe, flashing the tribe, mooning the tribe as they cruise by while they're holding their ceremony. For more information, people can go to their website, Winnemem-Wintu. That's WINNEMEMWINTU.US. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we'll be joined in the studios with 2nd District Supervisor John McCowan. You're listening to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. I'm publisher and host of the Mendocino Country Independent, Christina Onnestad. We're broadcasting live from KMEC 105.1 LPFM, and we're also on 96.9 FM, KYBU, in Covelo. In the studios with me is Second District Supervisor John McCowan. John, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And you are up for re-election.
Correct.
I think it would be fair and a responsibility here for us to state that, to let all of our listeners know that you are up for re-election, and you are actually being challenged. You have one challenger.
Yes, I do. Andrea Longoria.
And so there are a few things that we're going to talk about. Why don't we jump into them? You know, the first one, as we mentioned around the top of the hour, was your you have been quoted in a letter that was sent to the Obama administration by medical marijuana advocates in urging the White House, essentially, to end their war on medical marijuana to slow down the federal threats. I'm going to read the quotation, and then maybe we can just talk a little bit about it, and then we'll go on to a few other topics. We'll discuss the Harris Quarry, and which the supervisors voted to approve. Was it a unanimous vote?
A unanimous vote to certify the final EIR and a zoning code amendment that would allow consideration of the project. It will go back to the Planning Commission for a hearing on the use permit.
All right, and that's next month, right, that it goes back to the Planning Commission?
I believe so.
Okay. And let's go into this quote. You were quoted as saying, it's, quote, almost as if there was a conscious effort to drive medical marijuana cultivation and distribution back underground. My opinion is that's going to further endanger public safety and the environment. The federal government doesn't seem to care about that. Elaborate.
Well, I think that was in the wake of the raids on Northstone Organics, and they were one of the leading proponents of bringing the medical marijuana cultivation above ground within a regulated system, being inspected by the sheriff to assure that the environment was being protected, neighborhood concerns were being addressed, and there was no black market diversion. So here's the leading proponent of let's operate in full compliance with state and local law, and that's who the federal government chooses to take out. So I think that quote shows the frustration, and I believe that's what the National Reform Organization cited in using that quote, that it summed up their frustration at the federal government's stance.
Now, this was in response to the raids on a medical marijuana dispensary here in Mendocino County, and essentially the threats made to county supervisors or the request made to county supervisors to repeal the 99 plant law regulation that you had around medical marijuana.
Right. We had a very highly developed regulatory program for above-ground production inspected by the sheriff, and the federal government doesn't seem to like above ground and regulated. They prefer to drive it back underground. So they're systematically targeting dispensaries that are operating in full compliance with the law. The IRS is auditing dispensaries that are trying to be compliant and pay their taxes. And they don't seem to like that. They seem to prefer that it all be back underground, local government get no revenue, the environment not be protected, public safety not be protected. I think it's abhorrent that they're taking this approach.
Well, it's also interesting that President Obama recently publicly made a statement that he would entertain the idea, or he would entertain a debate on drug legalization, although he didn't think it would address the criminality behind cartels.
Well, and yet the reality is that nothing short of decriminalization will address the problems that are created by federal prohibition. The artificial value that is created by making something illegal when many people want it is what leads to probably 95% of all of the problems associated with it, including the violence.
So this is a report from the Associated Press, basically stating Obama speaking to an assembly of top executives from the hemisphere as part of his sixth summit of the Americas, said that he would be open to having a debate, but he doesn't believe it would lead to an agreement to legalize drugs.
It's a turnaround from 2004, when President Obama called the war on drugs an utter failure. And now we have a situation where the presidents of a number of the South American countries are seeing the horrendous violence that is created in their societies based on them being a pipeline to fuel the drug demand in the United States. And they're coming to the realization that decriminalization or legalization is the only viable way to address this. And here we have the president who, not that long ago, described the war on drugs as an utter failure, being a barrier to them trying to move forward in a way that will protect their people and their environment.
Okay. So it sounds like the drug war is just going to continue, essentially. But
unfortunately, that's one of the few things that there seems to be bipartisan agreement on in Washington.
For the most part. Congressmember Mike Thompson, who is phasing out of representing this district due to redistricting, had in the past put forth resolutions to reclassify medical marijuana, as well as Dan Hamburg, who represented this region in Congress in the past as well,
mm-hmm.
Who's now a colleague of yours on the Board of Supervisors. So what's going on the state level? And the state level, I understand that actually some language of yours has been used on a new bill from Mark Leno, state senator.
Yes, Senator Leno did recently introduce a bill that was based on language that I had submitted that would recognize the legality of dispensaries and delivery services provided they're operating in full compliance with the Attorney General guidelines from August of 2008. And this is intended to clear up one of the huge ambiguities in the law where, according to Prop 215 and even Senate Bill 420, medical marijuana is legal, but it's very unclear how patients are supposed to access the medical marijuana that the law says they can have. So, again, it's an effort to clear that up by making it explicitly clear in the law that dispensaries are legal and that they have a right to receive compensation for the medicine that they distribute.
So essentially, what's the driving force behind this? Is this a way to kind of safeguard, maybe to get the feds off the backs of our local growers?
I don't think it will so much get the feds off anyone's back, but I think it will encourage local jurisdictions to be less hasty to ban dispensaries, which has been one of their primary responses to the federal crackdown, is that rather than regulate dispensaries, they simply ban them outright. So this will clarify that properly operated dispensaries in compliance with state law are legal. And again, that's one of the ambiguities, that it's not really clear in state law. It's a legal theory that your attorney can argue in court. it'd be much better to have it clearly spelled out in the law. Now, that's a very minor aspect of the medical marijuana laws, but it would be a huge step forward that would prevent numerous unnecessary arrests and prosecutions. Meanwhile, Assemblymember Amiano has introduced a much more comprehensive medical marijuana regulation bill with the support of Senator Leno and others that would provide for a system of statewide regulation. And it's more of an omnibus bill, and I think it's based on one of the initiatives that was being circulated, but I don't know if the climate is favorable in Sacramento for such a broad, sweeping bill.
Do you have the number of that bill?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay, well, I'm sure that can easily be found on ledgeinfo.ca.gov. People can search, you know, search marijuana, medical mm-hmm. marijuana if they wanted. And that's where you can find legislative bills pending in the state and bills that exist here in the state of California. So since we're on the topic and since you're rerunning for election again, what is your stance on marijuana?
Well, I've been clear all along. I think that federal prohibition should be ended, or at a minimum, the federal government should recognize the right of the states to regulate medical marijuana or marijuana as they see fit. Prohibition is obviously a failure, a hugely expensive failure, and you just have to wonder, how long are we going to keep throwing billions of dollars at a problem when the effect of doing so only makes the problem worse?
All right. And what's your stance on medical marijuana?
Well, again, I'm not really tied to medical marijuana. I think marijuana is a fairly benign substance overall, certainly compared to alcohol. And if people want to have access to marijuana, medical or otherwise, that should be a personal choice. I think in the long run, we're probably going to see that marijuana will be regulated pretty much the way we regulate alcohol and tobacco. So it'll be regulated, it'll be taxed, adults will have access to it if they think they want to have access. It's ironic that so many people on the right complain about the nanny state and they think the government is meddling too much in our lives, and yet they think the government should have an opinion on what substances a person chooses to use within their private life.
All right. And, you know, I read somewhere an interesting conundrum of Republicans finding their parents are reaching an elderly age, there some of them are turning to medical marijuana, and it's beginning to shift. Even a right-wing anti-marijuana sentiment.
It's interesting that the right-wingers used to worry that their kids would use marijuana, and now apparently the kids are worrying that mom and dad may be using it.
Very interesting. Very funny. Okay. So let's see. We've got about 15 minutes left. So let's continue the conversation and talk a little bit about the Harris Quarry. The Mendocino County Supervisors met last week. And I think it was last week that you voted, the supervisors voted unanimously to approve the environmental impact statement for the Harris Quarry. Currently there's a rock quarry on the Willits Grade in between Willits and Ukiah, essentially, and Northern Aggregates want to now also have an asphalt plant there.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an ongoing issue in Mendocino County for 3 years?
Well, longer than that.
Four years?
They've been trying to get approval at that site since about 2004.
Okay.
They had previously tried to site a plant on North State Street and were denied. And the Board of Supervisors at the time suggested that they try to locate it up at the Harris Quarry. Of course, no future board is bound to that, and we took an independent look at it based on all the information.
And you were not on the board at the time.
No, I was not. I was on the County Planning Commission shortly before that time.
Okay.
And in fact, as a member of the Planning Commission, I voted against locating it on North State Street. Ironically, there's another asphalt plant on North State Street in approximately that same location, and this is in the Pomo Lane area. It's operated by Granite. It's in close proximity to quite a number of residences and also right by the Russian River. And I'm not aware of complaints coming in about that plant as to air quality or other impacts. Maybe they're going on and people are just not complaining about it.
Or forthcoming. Okay. So let's talk about what exactly is an asphalt plant.
Well, it takes...
What do you do at an asphalt plant?
It takes rock aggregate and mixes it according to a formula, including with a heavy grade of oil to produce asphalt, which is then used for paving our roads and highways.
Not for cement. It's not used for cement.
No, this will not be approval for a cement plant. At one time, I understand they were seeking approval for a cement plant as well. They do have a cement plant located in Willits, and they truck the aggregate from Harris Quarry to Willits, where they do produce cement. They also accept used cement and asphalt at that location and grind it up for reuse. So these industrial kind of processes are taking place every day in close proximity to existing residential neighborhoods. And what's different is putting it up on the hill in a rangeland area. But the nearest neighbor is located a mile away. So there will probably be fewer people having a direct impact at the Harris Quarry location than if it were located in other industrial zoned land.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, so we're going back to asphalt. Asphalt is essentially the dark black paving on the streets. Now, you mentioned there's already industrial activity going on. This is a new area. My understanding is that it's 75 feet of fill is going to be used to create a pad. There are concerns about that. What exactly does that look like for someone who's just tuning in? A 75-foot fill.
Well, and I don't think it's...
Is it a wall?
Well, I don't think it's 75 feet. I think what it is, the 75 feet refers to the height of the silos that will be used to store the asphalt in. And in order to... create the site where they're going to build the plant, they're going to excavate 20 feet down, and then another portion of the property is going to be built up about, I believe, 40 feet above grade. So you'll have a 20-foot cut and a 40-foot fill, which will all be engineered and compacted, and there's no question that that's going to be a huge change in that particular spot. It's going to convert it from a forested hillside to an industrial site, and there's no way to avoid that reality.
So, John, let me just chime in. So, somebody comes from an environmentalist background. You've been active with Earth First in the past, and you've been quite engaged in the community in many different capacities. So coming from an Earth First background, mm-hmm. why did you say give the okay on this environmental impact on this permit for the Harris Quarry?
Well, and just to be clear, the action we've taken so far was to certify the final environmental impact report to approve the rezoning And we adopted ordinance amendments that would allow for that rezoning.
And that rezoning will allow for the industrial development of the asphalt plant.
Provided they secure a use permit, and that part of the process is still going forward. So the Planning Commission will hear the use permit. Their action will be final unless it's appealed to the board. It may very well be appealed to the board, so I'm probably a little limited in exactly what I should say, but I think I can say why I was willing to consider the zoning code amendment and the rezone. And part of that is, if we're going to keep using asphalt, and so far it seems like we are, there has to be some place to produce it. And the reality right now is that as much as two-thirds of the asphalt used in Mendocino County is imported from out of the county. So we're losing the economic value of purchasing the product. We're often losing the value of the truck and the driver's time. That income is going to out of the county more often than not. And the local government is losing the sales tax that they would receive on the sale of the product. So if you're talking about economic localization, we're losing out in a big way by not having a local source of asphalt. There is another existing plant in the community, but because of the lack of competition, they can set the price almost wherever they want. And for relatively small jobs of 10, 20, or 50 tons, because the current plant doesn't have the ability to make small batches, unless someone is doing a job at the same time, there's a big job going on, they have no ability to buy it locally. They're forced to go out of the county.
So how much asphalt does Mendocino County need or use?
Well, for Caltrans jobs in 2011 and thus far in 2012, they used over 300,000 tons. And over 200,000 tons of that came from out of the area.
Why did it come out of the area if this other company already makes it and they do large quantities?
Well, only one company makes it currently. And again, they're not competitive on their price. And so also they do not have the ability to do small batches. And most paving jobs, even for Caltrans, involve relatively small amounts of material.
What are the small batches, do you know?
Well, 50 tons is small.
Is small.
You know, I think the Harris Quarry plant, when it gears up, will be able to produce 150 tons a day when it's running.
Will they do small batches?
They will have the ability, because they will have heated silos, they will have the ability to hold material over for several days. So they can produce the material if they know that there are going to be some small jobs coming in, and then hold it and dole it out as it's needed.
So now what if Caltrans just created a policy of purchasing asphalt where they're doing the work? I'm still unclear if the need would meet the demand. If the existing need could meet the demand.
The need exists now, given the amount that we're importing from outside the county.
Of course, so it sounds like the only reason we're importing it, based on what you're saying, and perhaps I'm wrong, is because of cost. And maybe we need to talk to Caltrans about that.
Well, no, it's cost, and it's also often availability, because if you have a small job, you can't get it anywhere in the county.
So let's go into environmental impacts, because people are complaining that they have concerns that there could be some environmental pollution, noise pollution, air pollution. We're looking at a 75-foot tall silo.
Mm-hmm.
How many silos?
There would be two of them, and again, the site would be excavated 20 feet, so they would be about 55 feet above current grade. They would be on the back side of the hill that is just north of the Harris Quarry. So no one will see the asphalt plant site from 101. The people who will clearly see it are people driving eastbound on Black Bart Drive.
Okay. So you mentioned you think that there might be an appeal to this permit, that it might actually, the Planning Commission might not support it.
Well, no, I don't prejudge what the Planning Commission will do, but whether they support it or not, I think it's probably can be anticipated that one side or the other will appeal it to the Board of Supervisors.
Oh, you mean like environmentalists or?
Well, there's a very active group.
Keep the code.
Yes, who has been opposed, and I would not be surprised if they would exercise every legal remedy that they have available to them.
So let's go back to the first question. One of the questions I had earlier, which was coming from an Earth First background, environmentalist background, how did you come to the conclusion of giving the yay for this permit?
Well, again, we didn't vote on the permit, and I need to make that clear.
Okay,
that's the second step that would still is yet to be decided. But
you voted yay on
the environmental impact
report.
Was, in my opinion, and I've read a lot of EIRs. It was very thorough, and I cannot think of any impact that wasn't addressed in detail. And I think people who have concerns about the various impacts, if they take the time to review the EIR, will find that some of their questions are going to be addressed. But there's no question that the plant is going to have aesthetic impacts for anyone who is in a position to see it. There's no question that it will have air quality impacts that don't exist there now, even though they might be largely mitigated by the fact that it will be state-of-the-art technology. It will be not only a new plant, but it will be based on a new design, very different from existing plants, and that new design will greatly reduce the potential for pollution. But there will be local air quality impacts, but then I balance that against what is the impact of having diesel trucks importing hundreds of thousands of tons of asphalt per year from out of the county and making the haul from Sonoma County or even Humboldt County, which is where much of our asphalt is coming from now. So I think you have to really try and balance out the different impacts. And again, if we're going to keep using asphalt, I think we need to find some place, and if this isn't the right place locally, then let's decide where it is. But there needs to be some local place where we can produce the material. And as you mentioned, there's some logic to producing it next to where the rock is actually produced. Because, again, you're economizing on your number of truck trips.
Okay. Well, that's good points you made there. Speaking of the truck trips, there's the it's 18 trucks estimated now, and that's going to increase up to 50 an hour.
At peak production.
So that's, what are we looking at, a tripling? Almost a tripling of the amount of trucks that are driving up into the region. So how much asphalt will be shipped out of Mendocino County?
I don't know. You know, I don't know that I've read anything on that specific point.
Okay. All right, John. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, are there any last comments you'd like to make as we wrap it up and then make a few announcements to our listeners?
Well, again, consideration of the use permit itself to allow the asphalt plant to go forward and the quarry expansion will be before the Planning Commission, and I encourage everyone who's interested in the topic to get as much information as you can, show up at the Planning Commission, advocate for your position. although the final EIR has been certified, it will be entirely up to the Planning Commission what conditions they wish to attach to the project. They're not limited by what the EIR has suggested. So they could relax conditions if they thought that was appropriate, or they could increase them.
All right, John. Well, thank you for stopping by and sharing your opinions on all things Mendocino County, from marijuana to industrial development to, all that good stuff.
Thank you.
All right, I want to let folks know a couple things. The Native Support Network is forming. It's in support of the Native American rights to indigenous culture and land in Mendocino and Lake Counties. There's an educational and direct action support group forming. It's started this Wednesday, April 18th at 6 p.m., and they're going to meet here at the Mendocino Environmental Center, 106 West Stanley Street. That's again, it's a Native Support Network forming Wednesday, April 18th at 6 p.m. For more information, people can call 462-1324. I want to let you know this Thursday, the Mendocino County Human Race is holding a wine and cheese event. That's from 5 to 7 p.m. at Henry Station Road in Ukiah. That's out by the Mendocino College off of Hensley Creek Road. Again, that's the Mendocino County Human Race Wine and Cheese event, April 19th, this Thursday. And the Mendocino County Human Race will be May 5th, 2012. We're going to leave with a little bit of music, and I want to thank you for listening to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. I'm Christina Onnestad, host.